Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hello, this is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway, and I am at Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas, and it is my pleasure to have with me today as a guest on the show, Mary Marchand. Mary is a training specialist with the fire prevention programs at the National Fire Academy. Mary, welcome.
Thank you. It's a great pleasure to be here, Rich.
Well, it's wonderful to have you as part of the program. You had given a presentation here at Fire Rescue International, and it kind of caught my attention to be thinking about prevention programs and the work that you're doing at the Fire Academy. So let's just start that as a good jumping off point and tell us a little bit about your work at the National Fire Academy.
Well, I'm responsible for fire prevention management programs at the National Fire Academy. So that's pretty all-encompassing when you think about it. But I really see my role as to bring the best possible curriculum that addresses the needs of the fire emergency services as it relates to managing those fire prevention programs, whether that's for the company officer, for the executive, fire leaders in our nation, for our fire marshals, for folks who just really want to have a good foundation of what it takes to manage good fire prevention programs. That's what I'm entrusted to do at the National Fire Academy.
Okay. Well, for the listeners out there who may not know, tell us just a little bit about some of the program offerings that are available at the Fire Academy that could help them in the area of prevention.
Well, in the community risk reduction leadership section that I'm involved in, we have the public education, we have the fire prevention management, and we have the fire prevention technical side. So for those folks that are interested in really getting a good grounding in how to reach the community, particularly for our fire and life safety educators, I'd certainly direct them to our curriculum in the public education section. For those who really want to learn more about systems and codes and really want a strong background in that, I'd certainly send them over to our technical side. And my responsibilities really rely in the areas of code development. So that's a course that we have. Cut, edit.
Okay.
I'm going to have to think about what my class is. Okay.
Okay. You want to take some notes? Or?
I'm just trying to think.
Sure. Just take a break and
code development, a systems process. I've got one called fire prevention management. I have the juvenile fire setter courses. I've got a 6-day course coming online called strategies. Okay, I got it. Okay.
Okay. And then you can just probably pick it up and say, like, in my area, because
okay.
I think that's kind of where you'd.
Okay, yeah.
Okay.
In my area, there's a course called Code Development, a systems approach that really looks towards the foundations of the code development process in the community and how you go about that. There's another course entitled Fire Prevention Management, which really is for those people coming into the fire service that want a really good grounding of what it takes to what a good fire prevention program looks like in the community, especially from a fire marshal's standpoint. I'm also responsible for the juvenile fire setter courses at the National Fire Academy. We have a 6-day course entitled Juvenile Fire Setter Intervention Specialists, Leadership 1 and 2. And that's really driven by the NFPA 1035 standard that addresses what a juvenile fire setter specialist needs to have. And we're in the process, probably sometime early next year, of having a 6-day course called Strategies for Community Risk Reduction, which really, I think, is designed for those folks who don't really understand what it takes to implement a good fire safety program in their community. And I think that this is going to give them the necessary tools to do that.
Excellent. Now, for those listeners who may not be that familiar with programs at the National Fire Academy, you might be sitting here saying it's all good stuff, but my department just doesn't have the money to be able to send me to the National Fire Academy. What's it cost for someone to go to the Fire Academy and take a class? Is there, you know, is there tuition and books, fees, and things like that?
Well, actually, that's a wonderful thing about the National Fire Academy. We pay your way. We provide lodging. The only thing that you have to do is buy a meal ticket, essentially. So we encourage people to go to our website to look at the courses that are offered. There's an application process that you have to go through. Some people get turned down, but a lot of people get accepted. And so it's really important when you read the criteria for the course that when you write out why we should select you, that you really show that you have a responsibility in that particular area, and that's going to help you to get it, to get in into the particular class you choose.
Good. Well, I want to say a little bit more about the National Fire Academy. When Mary says we pay to get you there, that means airfare. Mm-hmm. So your airline ticket's paid for. They give you a ride from the airport up to the academy. They give you a place to stay at the right on the academy grounds. And your tuition is taken care of. Your books are taken care of. The only thing that you or your department would have to pay for is a meal ticket to the cafeteria. And if you can find a cheaper way to get a week or two worth of the quality of training equivalent to the National Fire Academy for that price, then please send me an email and tell me where and how you do that. I've been to the Fire Academy now 17 times, and there's a reason for that. It is the premier place to go for leadership, prevention, education in the fire service. Their quality of the instruction is second to none. Quality of the program content is second to none. And it's a golden treasure for the fire service. If you've not been there, please, we'll put a link to the Fire Academy's website at the bottom of the player page for this podcast. Check it out. Talk to your administrator in your department. Tell them that you want to go to the National Fire Academy. If you get the resistance about the cost, tell them that it's free except for the meal ticket. You can't go wrong.
Rich, I'd also like to add to that, we realize that we only have so many slots at the National Fire Academy. So we are really looking at ways to deliver this kind of training. We're working on online courses. So I think that that'll be a great addition to not only coming there physically, but we know that a lot of people can't. So we're looking at to broaden what we offer online. Also, we work very closely with the state training directors to offer regional deliveries. And so, but oftentimes prevention gets overlooked. And so if people are interested in having prevention courses at the state level, they really need to get in touch with their state training directors, talk about why prevention is important for them. And we have agreements with states to offer National Fire Academy courses at the state level. So if that's something that the listeners are interested in, they really need to pursue that.
Okay. Well, Mary, when you say that you can come to the academy, you can go online, you have regional delivery, there's no cost. We're really taking away almost all the barriers that someone could throw up for why they would not want to bring prevention programs to the training level for their members of their department. Mary, even though we've seen some reduction in the number of fires and a number of initiatives towards reducing fire deaths that have been paying dividends, what needs to be improved yet?
Well, as we're here at Fire Rescue International, and we're looking at the scope of the fire problem, I think that one thing that really resonates, an area that I think is often overlooked, is actually homes and the residential fire problem. I think through codes, advancements in codes, all types of systems, that we've really done a lot with the commercial property. But it's still that single family dwelling, it's the apartment house that really is where, according to my latest numbers, 78% of the structure fires occur in residential properties. So that's an area that we in the Fire Emergency Services really need to attack, and not only from a response side, but also from the prevention side. We know who suffers the most from fires, and that's the poor, the disadvantaged, our elderly populations, people with disabilities, and the very young, and that has not changed over time. So as we're looking at those residential areas in our communities, are there specific areas that we can target, that we can go in? And I always kind of think about it like doing surgery, that we need to identify areas in our communities that we need to go in and especially look at this residential fire problem. And another reason that that's important for firefighters is that after cardiac attacks, after roadway injuries that kill and injure firefighters, it's the house fire that's the leading cause of death to firefighters. So my word to firefighters is beware of that house fire. You know, oftentimes we look at that as kind of low risk, but when you look at it to what it means to firefighter deaths and injuries, it's really one of those high severity fires. So we really need to get in our communities and see what we can do to raise the level of awareness about fire safety in homes.
Okay. Tell us about what makes a successful community risk reduction program, or what efforts toward community risk reduction are successful?
Well, when I think of it, I really think that there are three elements. And if you don't have all three of these elements, it's just not going to work. I've had the honor and privilege here to talk to company officers. And what we're really trying to do, because, I mean, I really believe this. I've heard a lot since I've been here about how the company officers, you know, they really shape their particular station. And when we look at the role of the company officer, we really need, and this is true of all people in the fire emergency services, but that really individual commitment to fire and life safety. I think we have that commitment to the response side. I don't know that we have that commitment to the prevention side. And that if you were to go out in your community right now and go up to the first person and ask them, would you rather have me manage your home fire tonight, or would you rather have me prevent it? And it's just hard to imagine that there's not a person out there on the street that doesn't want their fire prevented, doesn't want their injury prevented. And so I think that sometimes we look at the community as a liability instead of an asset. So it really has to begin with us. You know, what do we see our role in prevention? And so often, I think over the years, and I've been involved in this a long time, that we have really diminished the value of prevention. And I cannot understand why that is. We just seem to have a string of activities that aren't connected to any kind of strategic plan for our department. We go out, we kind of give lip service. We do a lot of things with children, and that's fine. But to have a comprehensive fire and injury prevention program in your community, it has to be a lot more than just dealing with children. And so first you have to have that individual commitment. Then secondly, and this is where the company officers, the chief officers come into play, is that you have to have that organizational commitment. If you don't have it, if you don't believe in it, why is the community going to believe in it? So I think we have a responsibility to develop that culture of safety, develop that culture of prevention in our communities, and we have to do that within our organization. And then lastly, I think that we need to engage the community. I don't think we do that enough. I don't think that we go out and talk to people about what the problems are in their communities and how they can help. I don't know in the fire service that we've been very good listeners. We're so busy telling people what to do that oftentimes we don't sit back and listen to what our community thinks the issues and problems are, and that we need to do a much better job of engaging the community in what their problems are so that they can come up with the solutions that are going to best suit them.
That's a very interesting and salient point about engaging the community and listening. You said we spend a lot of our time teaching and not so much listening. I had an opportunity some time back to talk to a seniors group about the topic of fire prevention in the home. And for many reasons, I was not prepared for the presentation. I had gotten busy and just didn't have good notes as to what I wanted to talk about. So when I got before the group, as they were doing their beginning ceremonial things, I had a business card that I decided that I would just write down a few questions that I would ask them to try to spark the discussion. Well, it ended up for the evening, I asked questions and they gave answers, and I learned more about them than what I would have ever by just giving a presentation. And in their answers, they also then asked me questions that made me realize some of the things that are important that they want to know wouldn't have necessarily been the things that would have been part of my prepared presentation. And it was really an eye-opener for me. Stephen Covey says that seek first to understand and then to be understood. Yes. And that was a very important lesson for me that evening, to try to understand from their perspective what was important in what they wanted in information on prevention and home fire safety. And that's a very important lesson that we should go out and listen more in the community. How does a fire department get started? And what are some of the keys to success?
Well, I think the very first step is to really know your community. And I think so often we're so busy running calls that we don't really sit back, and we really need to look at our data. And, I'm convinced that there are people in the stations that would probably like to do this kind of thing, especially with the use of technology. There are folks out there that really like to do things with numbers. And so I would implore our company officers, our executive fire officers, to one of the keys to success with the community risk reduction program is to know your data. And I think that our data can tell us a lot. It can tell us what the leading causes of deaths and injuries and property loss. And even though my main focus is on fires, over, the last 15 years, I've become very interested in injury prevention and control in general. When you look at the majority of our calls are EMS related, and I think the same principles that we use in the reduction of fires can also be used in the reduction of injury. And I think our program should be data-driven. I don't think that we should just be using the campaign du jour that some national organization has put out. That may or may not fit your community. So I think that you need to look at the human-caused reasons for deaths and injuries in your community. A lot of our communities are affected by natural occurring disasters, and so you need to be prepared and have programs that address those kinds of things. But I think first and foremost, the data has to drive your program, and you just shouldn't just pull something out of the air and go out and talk to your community about it. It really should be something that is affecting people in your community, and what can you tell them, and what can they do to work with you to make everybody safer. I think in the fire service, we have a picture or we have an idea of, you know, constantly looking at big risk kinds of things. But for the most part, the things that take the toll on our community are the daily kinds of things, the cooking fires, the falls, the motor vehicle crashes. And so, once again, I think you have to go back and you have to look at your data, and then you have to identify, do I have target populations in my community? Do I have target areas? You know, this isn't brain surgery. I mean, I think most of us could go into any community and kind of drive around for a half hour and kind of get an idea of areas in the community that are most likely to need help. And so particularly, and I want to really emphasize the role of the company officer, because who knows the community better than the company officer? So they really are in... just a wonderful. They really are in the driver's seat to make things happen in their community. Then I think you have to look about what's going to work in your community. And we always talk about the three E's at the National Fire Academy. That's education, engineering, and enforcement. And so if you have a problem that really you can use those three things, you're probably going to be more effective than just using one by itself. And having been a fire life safety educator for many, many years, I think programs that can be only solved by education, we found, just don't seem to hit the mark. So if you have a particular problem, let's say that drowning's a problem in your community, certainly if you can do education, but when you can talk about, you know, fences around pool alarms, when you can pull in those engineering features, that's going to make a difference. And in a lot of communities, they actually have legislation that you have to have pool alarms for pool fencing. And so that makes a difference, and your program's going to be a lot more effective that way. So try to remember those three E's, the education, the engineering, and the enforcement. And then I just want to say a little bit about implementation. I think that going out and working with the community is a skill. And we spend a lot of time in training, teaching our firefighters how to do different kinds of skills. But I think it really is a skill to work with people in the community, to develop, you know, good public speaking abilities. You know, these are things that can be learned. And I think really what people in the community want to see is someone who comes in who really has a passion and who feels that they care about them. I think, you know, I've done this for a long time, and that was something that, you know, people would really remark. I mean, they felt that I cared about them. And I think people know intuitively whether you're there because you want to be or you're there because you have to be. And lastly, I just want to spend a couple seconds talking about evaluation, because we see time and time again, we hear you can't prove that prevention works. And honestly, I just want to scream and pull my hair out when I hear people say that, because that's not true. I mean, if you start with some sort of baseline, let's say the cooking is a leading cause of fires in your community. And last year you had 100 cooking fires. So now you've decided that you're going to do the three E's, and, you know, you're going to talk to people in the community, and you're going to engage them in the process, and you're going to come up with a program. And you go out and you implemented it, you monitor over time. You know, that 100 fires should go down to 75, to 50, to 25, and you can see over time that it's working. So this business that we don't know that prevention works, I mean, it just isn't true. We have lots and lots of examples. And if we look over the last 30 years in what's happened in fires in our nation, we see that fire incidents are down 52% in the last 30 years. In this nation. Now, we still have an $11 billion fire law, so for those, especially in emergency response, who worry that there are not going to be any fires, with an $11 billion fire loss yearly in the United States, we have a long way to go until we get to zero.
For sure.
A long way.
Good point. This is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. I'm your host, Rich Gasway, with Mary Marchand at the Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas. We're going to take a break and hear a word from a sponsor, and then we'll be back to talk more about the fire prevention programs and community risk reduction efforts through the National Fire Academy.
Radio at firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters.
Welcome back to the Leader's Toolbox. I'm your host, Rich Gassaway. We're at Fire Rescue International with Mary Michon, the program chair in the prevention management programs at the National Fire Academy, and we're talking about prevention and community risk reduction efforts. Mary, before the break, you had talked about evaluating and looking at the data in your local community and looking at the kind of events that you have, and you kind of gave several examples, cooking fires, falls, motor vehicle accidents, and it really put things into focus for me that we're talking about more than just fire prevention here. We're talking about community risk reduction, and those risks are far beyond just fires.
Well, I'm hoping that people in fire emergency services can kind of get their arms around community risk reduction. And I think that firefighters understand about risk, and what I want to do is kind of expand on their horizon about risk management. And I can remember back in about 1987, I was in my office, I went in, sat down, and there was a book sitting there. To this day, I have no idea where it came from, and it was called Injury in America. And it was really to the public health field what America Burning was to those of us in the fire service. And the very first page, when I opened it up, said something like 400,000 Americans die each year from injury. And it cut that.
Okay.
I think it was 140. You know, I'm sure it was over 100,000. Yeah, okay.
Okay. You just start with finding the book in your office. And
I found this book in my office called Injury in America, which was to the public health folks what America Burning was to those of us in the fire service. And when I opened it up, the very first line said something like, over 144,000 Americans die each year from injury. And when I read that, I mean, I still remember. I couldn't believe it. I mean, at that time, 1987, we were probably losing, you know, 10,000 people to fires a year. And it just struck me about, you know, the toll that that takes on our nation. And so I, from that day on, I thought, you know, we need to broaden our perspective. I was originally with Montgomery County Maryland Fire Rescue Service. We did a lot of services in EMS, and it just seemed to me that we needed to broaden our horizon. And a lot of fire departments around that the nation have done that. I mean, they really have embraced what I want to call community risk reduction. That's not only fire, and I think obviously for the fire service, I mean, fire is always going to be something that is going to be our main responsibility. But if we see that we have this high rate of older Americans falling, if we see that we've got this terrible drowning problem in our community, if we see that we have a problem with pedestrian, I mean, I think once again that we have a role in that. Now, it may not be that it is our major responsibility, but we can certainly be a player with other people in our cities to be at the table, to make policy, to be out there to help educate our people on what they can do to prevent, or at least, if not prevent, how we can mitigate these things. And I think oftentimes in the fire service, we find ourselves really what I would call downstream. We kind of go in and we try to mitigate it. And I like to tell the story about, imagine if you were standing on the side of a stream. And you look down, and there's a child that they come floating by, and you jump in and you pull them out to the shore. And another 20 minutes, you know, another child falls in, and you know, and so you do this all day long. Well, I kind of feel that that's kind of where we are right now with fire and emergency services. that were always going in the middle. And so after you had been rescuing these children all day long, I think it would occur to you, well, maybe I need to go upstream and find out what it is that they're falling in the first place. So you go up and you find that there's a bridge and there's a big hole in it. As the kids are walking across, they fall in one by one by one. So I think that's kind of where we are with fire. You know, if cooking, which we know is you know, a quarter of our home fires, if we know that that's a problem in our community and we keep going to cooking fire after cooking fire after cooking fire, doesn't make sense to go upstream and try to figure out why we're having so many cooking fires. Is it that people go out and they leave the stove on? Are they coming in after a late shift and they're putting something on to cook and they fall asleep? I mean, what's causing these things? And so once again, you go back to your data, and this is all the more reason for good fire reporting. And if we can write a narrative that says what the person was doing so that you can kind of go back then, and are there episodes that we can string together that look alike that we can come up with then with the right interventions that are that's going to make a difference?
Well, I'm glad you shared that story about the firefighters jumping into the stream to save the children. That was part of a conversation that you and I had yesterday, and that's probably what triggered me to invite you to do the podcast. That I said that makes so much sense, is to, you know, be able to go upstream, find the hole in the bridge, and fix the hole and prevent the kids from falling into the water in the first place. Gordon Graham, who does a lot of teaching and consulting on risk and risk reduction, one of my favorite quotes from him is, "If you can predict it, you can prevent it." And, you know, focusing on the prevention of the things that we can predict. And in our communities, we can predict that certain things are going to happen, and a certain number of fires of a certain number of causes and accidents and falls. And if, and you know, on his mantra, if we can predict it, then we can find ways to prevent it. And that's kind of what you're saying, is instead of spending all of our time and energy in that high risk environment of jumping into that raging stream to rescue that child, if we can dedicate some time and resources to going upstream and seeing the factors that are contributing and fix those, then we can actually reduce the high risk activities that we do, which is the, you know, jumping in the water to save the kids, of which, you know, though maybe the unspoken continuation of that parable, Mary, is that some of the firefighters who jump into those raging waters don't survive.
That's correct.
And some of those children that we jump in to save don't survive. And that's where it becomes truly tragic. You know, if you thought it was just as easy as to jump in the water, grab the kid, come to shore, and there's never a consequence, you're looking at it short-sighted, and that risk associated with those types of activities that we do. And again, we're using this in a parable type example, create a great deal of potential consequence both for civilians and firefighters.
Rich, I don't know if you were at the opening session this morning.
Yes.
At FRI, but we heard the new U.S. Fire Administrator speak, Kelvin Cochran. And he had such passion, and I think was so inspirational for everyone there in the audience. And I know one of the things that he talked about that's kind of near and dear to my heart is about that whole idea about accidents, and how at the Fire Academy we really try to work to get folks to eliminate the word accident from their vocabulary. And I noticed today that he used crashes. And I think the whole idea about accidents, that it kind of brings to mind that it wasn't anything that anybody could have done. It was fate, chance, luck, act of God, happened to be standing in the wrong place at the wrong time. But it's interesting that we never really hear about airplane accidents. Have you ever noticed that? You know, they always call them crashes because, yeah. I mean, that's what it is.
Yeah.
And we know that we can go back, and there is a sequence of events. I don't care what kind of incident you look at, but there's a sequence of events that occur. And just like Gordon Graham talks about, they're predictable, they're preventable, they're understandable. We know why these things happen. So do we want to intervene? And the further upstream we intervene, the less likely it is that it's even going to happen. And so we do have these intervention points. The problem is, depending on where we intervene, the outcome isn't so good. So the farther you get upstream, the better you are. And then if we could just work to eliminate using this, you know, I try to use... it's unintentional instead of accidental. I use words, you know, a crash, an incident, an event. But I think if you look over the next month or two, how often people use the word accident, you know, it's just so ingrained in our vocabulary. So it, I know I had heard several years ago that down at the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, that in their injury prevention section years ago, they used to charge people 25 cents every time they used the word accident. And I thought that that was really interesting. So to our listeners, just try to find another word. We don't want to reinforce that things that are accidents are things that are expected. We know that we do understand a lot about why these things happen.
Mm-hmm. Mary, where could someone go if they wanted to get more resources or information about community risk reduction?
Well, obviously working at the United States Fire Administration, I'd certainly direct them to the USFA website. There's all kinds of publications that are available. We can send some numbers of those out to communities, but we can also, you can work with the people in our publication centers that they can give you artwork so that you can take it to someone in your community who may want to run off, you know, 15, 20,000 of these things for you, that would be a way to increase your stock. I mentioned going to the in our publication section. One of the things I think, and it was what really I cut my teeth on, was a manual called the 5-Step Planning Process. And it really outlines, like I did here today, about the surveillance. I mean, being able to identify your problem, working with the community, what are interventions, how do you evaluate. And I think for company officers, you know, that would make really a great training tool on educating people in your department on how you go about doing good community risk reduction. Certainly, I think it's a good idea for to call your state fire marshal's office. Some have very fine prevention bureaus that have full-time fire and life safety educators that are there to help. I would implore people to talk to other fire departments. A lot of the problems that we come up with are things that fire departments across the country have been working with some, you know, as long as, you know, 30, 40 years now. And so I don't know that there's a lot new under the sun. You know, I certainly look at the CDC website. They have an incredible amount of information in their injury prevention section. We have the Home Safety Network, the expert network with the Home Safety Council that is out there to assist. Go to our USFA website. There's lots of links for places across this nation that really are ready, able, and willing to assist people who want to do this kind of work.
Okay, we'll put a link to the USFA website at the bottom of the player page. Mary, you said there were some resources available that you could send out to help departments in getting the message out in prevention. And I would guess that communities are becoming more and more diverse. In the community that I live in, one of the statistics that I had learned from the school administration that was a little bit surprising to me in the upper Midwest suburban environment that we live in, you wouldn't necessarily think that there would be 21 languages other than English spoken as the first language in the home of the students who go to our schools. So is there resources available through the U.S. Fire Administration that can help departments fashion messages in a variety of languages?
You know, that's something that I would have to check on, but I think that this is really an area that you need to engage your own community. I'm amazed at how many, I mean, you mentioned your community had 20-odd some I hear others that may have many, 75 different languages spoken. It's amazing. And I think this is where you need to go into those areas. And people, I don't care what ethnicity they are. I mean, people know who the movers and shakers are in their communities. And so you need to tap these people and then find out what's the best way that they receive the information. Because so many of us in the United States are literate, we think that the way is the written message. But that's not necessarily the way different nationalities receive their information. So, I mean, you really are talking about customizing. But you're also talking about targeting. And so are there areas in your community that are at higher risk than others? You need to find that out. And I think really going into those communities and working with those people and having them help you design programs that reach them, I think that that's probably the best way to go.
That's good advice. Good advice. I'm with Mary Marchand. She is the training specialist in the fire prevention management programs at the National Fire Academy. We're coming to you from Fire Rescue International in Dallas, Texas. And this is the Leader's Toolbox on Firehouse.com. Mary, I would like to thank you for the gift of your time and being my guest here on the show. It was a pleasure to have you, and hopefully our listeners now understand more about what's available to them in resources and training in prevention and community risk reduction at the Fire Academy.
Thank you. And could I just add, if any of your listeners want to contact me, my email at the National Fire Academy is mary.marchone, M-A-R-C-H-O-N-E, at dhs.gov, and I would be glad to help in any way possible.
And we'll put a link to Mary's email also on the player page. And Mary, thank you again for being my guest.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening. And stay tuned to Firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.